Blog Talk Radio.
I am the nation. I was born on July 4th, 1776, and the Declaration of Independence is my birth certificate. The bloodlines of the world run in my veins because I offered freedom to the oppressed. I am many things and many people. I am the nation. I am 200 million living souls and the ghost of millions who have lived and died for me. I am Nathan Hale and Paul Revere. I stood at Lexington and fired the shot heard round the world. I'm Washington, Jefferson, Patrick Henry. I'm John Paul Jones, the Green Mountain Boys, and Davy Crockett. I'm Lee and Abe Lincoln. I remember the Alamo, the Maine, and Pearl Harbor. When freedom called, I answered and stayed until it was over there. I left my heroic dead in Flanders fields and in the steaming jungles of Vietnam. I am the Brooklyn Bridge, the wheatlands of Kansas, and the granite hills of Vermont. I am the coal fields of the Virginias and Pennsylvania, the fertile lands of the West, the Golden Gate and Grand Canyon. I sprawl from the Atlantic to the Pacific. 3 million square miles. I'm more than 3 million farms. I'm forest, field, mountain, and desert. I'm quiet villages, and I'm cities that never sleep. You can look at me and see Ben Franklin walking down the streets of Philadelphia. I'm Babe Ruth in the World Series. I'm 130,000 schools and colleges and 326,000 churches where my people worship God as they please. I'm a ballot dropped in a box. I am an editorial in a newspaper. And I'm a letter to a congressman. I'm Thomas Edison, Albert Einstein. I'm Horace Greeley, Will Rogers, and the Wright brothers. I'm George Washington Carver, Daniel Webster, and Jonas Salk. I'm Walt Whitman, Thomas Paine, Tom Sawyer, and Walt Disney. Yes, I am the nation, and these are the things that I am. I was conceived in freedom, and God willing, in freedom I'll spend the rest of my days. May I possess always the integrity, the courage, and the strength to keep myself unshackled, to remain a citadel of freedom and a beacon of hope to the entire world. I am the nation.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Patriot Education, brought to you, as always, by the great folks at www.patriotfamilies.com. My name is Terry Rowland. I'm your hostess for this evening, and I'm looking forward to our chat and our talk and our radio show tonight. Our topic, ladies and gentlemen, this evening is the Common Core, something rotten in our apple for the teacher. I know a lot of the folks who listen to my show here on Blog Talk, and I know most of the folks who belong to our group, Patriot Families, are fans of Glenn Beck, and we understand that he has a clear view of some of the problems that we are experiencing in our nation that are going to lead us to a place we do not want to call home. Tonight, his show was about a situation in Texas with a supposedly nonprofit corporation called C-Scope, which is basically a blueprint for teaching K-12 education that totally throws out every American value, every hero of American history, every understanding of what makes us a great nation in favor of lauding communism, stating that Islam and Christianity are identical, and telling students that everything is scarce and that the most important thing in their lives is becoming a part of the global collective and conserving and worshiping Mother Earth. I have seen in my 40-plus years of teaching the dumbing down of our public schools. It began with the creation of the Federal Department of Education under Jimmy Carter's administration, and it has proceeded at an incredibly rapid pace downhill ever since. The horrifying information that Glenn and his guests put forth on tonight's show on The Blaze is something that I have been watching happen for over 30 years. We have a president who spends a great deal of time in foreign countries apologizing for American exceptionalism. We have a Congress, a Senate in particular, that has not been able to pass a budget in over 6 years, at least one that actually takes into consideration that you can't spend money that you don't have. We have textbooks that I personally saw and had to teach from when I was substituting 8 years ago that in the history of World War II devoted not one word to the Bataan Death March and spent 5 pages on the incredible evil of our dropping atomic bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. I hear every week about anti-bullying topics and that there is no bad behavior, only communication we do not understand. I see children in my in-school suspension classroom who hate school after they've been socially promoted through 8 years of it and are unable to do simple math, cannot write, and cannot read. I watch classrooms where the teacher has to scream in order to get the attention of 20 to 25 young people, and even that, half the time, is ineffective. I am horrified by the imposition of the Common Core curriculum through the Department of Education, which by its charter is not permitted to interfere or suggest or adjust any curriculum whatsoever in any school in this nation. The Common Core, which basically dumbs down our students even further than they already are, is being dangled as the, I guess you could say, the writing crop to force states and localities to impose it in order to get that wonderful federal dollar to build the beautiful new schools with the in-school radio station, swimming pool, and 25 teachers for every 2 students, none of whom actually know anything, but they've been taught how to teach. We as Americans, ladies and gentlemen, even if we do not have children in public school, need to wake up and smell the coffee. We need to smell the reek from the Department of Education and the current Senate and the White House. We need to recognize that our children are at risk, not for the usual scare tactics of drugs and unwanted pregnancy and beating up on gay students. No. Our children are at risk from their own government because they are being subliminally and directly taught that American exceptionalism, capitalism, freedom, liberty, individual rights are passé if they are not inherently evil, and they do imply that they are inherently evil, and that the only thing that matters is being a good global citizen and accepting everybody for absolutely wonderful people, even when they fly an airplane into the World Trade Center. I believe in tolerance, ladies and gentlemen. I believe in judging people by what they do and not sticking a label on them and assuming that they are evil simply because they attend a specific church, come from a particular country, have a certain skin color or ethnic heritage, or fall on the left or right side of the American political spectrum. I am not in favor of slop being taught to our children and called education. If you were watching Glenn's show this evening, you may have heard David Barton describing the fight he put up with the educational standards that were being put in place in the Texas schools. And in one that I think is the most illuminating, he talked about the standards being rewritten to say that everything that students in middle school should be taught the, I guess you could say, the scarcity of everything in the world. And his request was that they be taught about scarcity and abundance. And it was denied because, according to the comments from the liberals who outweighed conservatives on the study committee, that everything is scarce, no matter how much we have of it. Is it any wonder we are graduating people from high school who can't make change from a $20 bill for a bill for a cost of $14.75? They are being made stupid. No, everything is not scarce. We have plenty of dirt. We have lots of salt water. We have lots of air. We have incredible reserves of natural gas and coal. But we must teach our children that they are not allowed to have things unless it comes from the government and is vetted by people like Mayor Bloomberg so that it doesn't have too much sugar in it or trans fats. Our children are being taught that to think is evil. They are being taught that to have an opinion is evil unless it coincides with the opinion of our government masters. Our children are being given what is laughingly called an education that is the direct opposite of that. Education is supposed to be a dissemination to students of skills, concepts, and ideas upon which they can then build their own self-education throughout their lives. My friend Linda in the chat room said that Barton called the people who put these things together educrats, and it's a beautiful word, and it fits. I sat in a meeting as a representative of the paraprofessionals and the staff, meeting with the people who were evaluating our school to see if it was going to be accredited according to their association, which, by the way, is funded by and under the auspices of the Federal Department of Education. They don't actually work for the Department of Education, but the Department of Education recommends them as arbitrators and decision makers onto whether or not a school is accredited as providing the proper education to its students. If your schools are not accredited, I've got educrat running in my head, by these educrats, then you do not receive funding from the federal government unless you do something to make your school match what these educrats say a good school should do. When I sat in that meeting, the guidance counselor for our school spent a great deal of time repeating the phrase data-driven over and over and over again. This is edu-speak for standardized testing. This is educrat bureaucratic gobbledygook. In other words, what makes us worthy of accreditation is the fact that we test everybody as often as the federal government says we should. In tonight's tonight's program, the two teachers who were members of who were guests tonight and were talking about the C-Scope organization that is imposing this ungodly teaching protocol on the teachers in Texas public schools. The teachers said, one of them, who was a math teacher and retired because he refused to follow this, that the material that these kids were being so frequently tested on, every single bit of it had at least 20% of the test asking them things that wasn't covered under the curriculum, that they were never taught. The other teacher, who is still working in the public school system, said that they are spending one out of every five classroom days testing people. And people with clipboards are running around, walking in and out of classrooms, checking off whether the teachers are following the script for what they're teaching. So that means if a kid asks a question that might lead to a discussion that's germane to the subject, but not following the script, the teacher has to shut them up and go right back to the script. This creates thinking citizens? Not. Progressive Fabian socialists cannot afford, ladies and gentlemen, to allow our children to think. Because if they did, they would be sitting there going, what in the are you trying to tell me? This doesn't make any sense. But we can't have that in the global community, ladies and gentlemen. We cannot encourage our children to learn more than the script provides. We cannot allow our kids to question the almighty benevolent God in Washington, who tells them what they need to know and that after they know it, they have the right to go to college. I had a student in my ISS classroom today who has a great many problems with learning. He is dyslexic. He is dysgraphic. His handwriting is even worse than my husband's, and that's saying something, because my husband sometimes can't even read his own handwriting. The school, under the auspices of his individualized education plan, as prescribed by the Department of Education in their use of and adherence to the Americans with Disabilities Act as it pertains to education, the school provides him, supposedly, with a laptop computer so that he can type in responses and papers and so on and so forth, because his teachers can't read what he actually writes with his delicate little fingers. He very rarely actually has the thing. It's kept locked up in one of the teacher's rooms, and he's supposed to go and get it or ask for it or something. And, of course, he never does, because it would mean he would actually have to do the work, which he really doesn't want to do. To quote him directly, school is dumb. Well, I had a little talk with the gentleman today, and I told him, that he's a bright kid, and he is. Most dyslexic people are actually above average in IQ. It's kind of like a divine compensation for the difficulty they have with perception of the written word. They're given a little bit of a boost in the intelligence side so they can figure out a way to work around the challenge and get the information anyhow. And this is a bright kid. And I told him, when you used your laptop to write out your essay, after I helped you figure out the outline, it was a good essay. It was well thought out. It made sense. It was very good. But, you know, if you don't use the accommodations that they're giving you, the things that are helping you to meet the challenge of the troubles that you have, why should people want to help you? If you use your challenges as an excuse not to even try, why do you think people are, do you really think people are going to go out of their way to help you out? And he said, no. I said, you're right, they won't. I said, if you were here in my classroom and you asked me, Mrs. Rowland, can I type this stuff on my computer and save it to a flash drive and then you can put it in yours and print it out for me? I'd have said, sure, I'll be happy to do that for you. Because you'd be getting the work done and you'd be showing how smart you are. I don't know whether my little lecture had any effect. It's one thing about being a teacher, you never really know. Maybe it did. I keep trying, ladies and gentlemen, because I refuse to give up. And I know for a fact that I have had a positive influence on my students because they've come back and told me so. Not everybody is that lucky in my profession. Sometimes you don't find out that you were successful in what you did until 40 years after you started. And you're retired and sitting on a porch somewhere in Florida, and some kid comes up and says, hey, Mrs. Rowland, I was in ISS in eighth grade, and you know what? What you told me made me really pull it together, and now I have my PhD. Oh, that happens. It does happen. But it's not going to happen with a common core that dumbs down every child in this nation. Because the teachers aren't going to be allowed to tell these kids the truth. They are going to be nothing more than robotic puppets who spew out the party line coming from Washington. And you will hear from the liberals and the Department of Education and the liberal bloggers and the liberal educrats that, oh no, we just want to make sure that where you live shouldn't matter, that everybody's going to meet the same standards, and we want to be sure that your kids have the best education in the world, and it shouldn't matter whether you live in Texas or Oklahoma or California or Maine or Chicago or New York. We're going to make it a national standard. Well, it always sounds good. It's the sugar coating on that apple for the teacher that's rotten at the core. There isn't any way, ladies and gentlemen, that imposing a common core curriculum is going to cure stupidity. It won't. The common core, all it will do will be to make every state in this nation into the let's see how fast we can dumb them down so we get more federal money. As it is right now, in most school systems, classrooms, curriculum, everything is pretty much run by the special education department. Because special education departments are the ones who garner the federal funding that the schools need. Almost all of the federal money that goes to states for schools is earmarked for specific programs. It cannot be spent in the general education fund. It must be applied to specific programs, Head Start, or No Child Left Behind, just about any one of the, oh, we've got to focus all of our attention on the kids who can't learn, because obviously if we just have enough regulations and enough money, we can put brains in their heads and they'll learn. Well, we can't. It used to be that field trips and extra special events and so on and so forth that gave opportunity for learning something outside the curriculum went to students who were bright, who got good grades. They were the rewards for good scholarship, and they increased the amount of knowledge that the children had. Not anymore. Not anymore. Many schools don't take field trips anymore because they can't control the behavior of their collaborative classes. We have a number of children in our school who can't ride the bus because they can't behave. They're driven to and from school by a county vehicle with a county-paid driver because their behavior on the bus is so appalling that it's a danger to the safety of the driver and the rest of the kids. But we have to provide these things because there's such a thing as FAPE, a free, appropriate public education, which was the forerunner to the Common Core idea. That somehow or other, we can produce through federal regulation, federal oversight, and federal money, equal outcomes for every child in public school. If we just make enough regulations and have enough tests and use just the right curriculum and spend enough money, every single child in this nation in public school will be a straight-A student and go on to college. Now, you will not hear any progressive say that flat out. Earlier this evening, I was watching Neil Cavuto's show on Fox, and he was talking to Steny Hoyer about the president's doom and gloom prophecy about sequestration. And Neil asked Mr. Hoyer, did the president overstate the case? Well, of course, he beat around the bush for a while, and then he finally came out and he said, well, you might say that he may have slightly, perhaps, gone a little further in the possible bad stuff than actually turned out to happen, but everybody makes mistakes. This is liberals for you, folks. They can't even say a simple yes or a simple no. They've never been able to. Because every word out of their mouth has to promote the party line. I don't know how many of you out there listening know what a party apparatchik is. This is a Russian term that comes from the good old days of the Soviet Union. An apparatchik in the Communist Party was a party hack. He basically stood up and was a mouthpiece for the party line. He was elected to his position. The Soviet Union had lots of elections. Of course, the only people who ran on the Communist Party ticket, so you didn't have a lot of choice, but he got elected. And so anytime he was back in his home district talking about what needed to be done or whatever, he was going to toe the party line, and he was going to have a nice, comfortable dacha on the Black Sea, and he was going to retire with his wife and his six children and their offspring and be first in line at the party store when everybody else in the country was standing in line for the three overcoats that they happen to have available this winter. He had one with a fur collar and a nice Ziv with a driver. Actually, usually it was a Cadillac because the Russian Ziv broke down too often. Collectivism in the factories, folks. We have right now, ladies and gentlemen, in our Senate majority, in our White House, and in our cabinet positions, a horde of party apparatchiks. People who will toe the Fabian socialist Marxist communist line and parrot anything that comes out of the White House. They are intent upon convincing the American people, at least 51% of them that put the thing back in office, that government knows what's good for them much better than they do. And that government, in the guise of people like Bloomberg and his crusade against obesity, meaning nobody has the sense not to put sugar in their coffee if they're trying to lose weight, they are going to work on those of us who are adults. And they know that they will have marginal success. But they lick their chops at the public schools because there they will be successful 90% of the time. Because children are malleable. Children are impressionable. Children are taught that they need to listen to authority figures. Children are also, or used to be taught, that they were supposed to respect teachers. And the teachers were people who would give them an education and tell them the truth. Now that is changing. The number of students that I have seen in the last 25 years or so who assume that teachers are stupid and incapable of doing anything of real value has risen astronomically. I saw it with my own stepdaughter when she was in high school 20 years ago. I saw it with kids that I tutored 20, 25 years ago. Teachers are dumb. I saw it 2 years ago when a student told the art teacher in our school that he didn't have to behave in her class because if she was really any good at anything, she wouldn't be teaching. She'd be a famous artist. It's that stupid old idea that if you can't do, teach, that progressives basically have exploited and used. They have fattened up the teachers' union because the teachers' union gives them a block of voters. They have managed to put in through the teachers' unions in many states and other unions as well, the socialist idea that you should not be allowed to work unless you are willing to join a collective, otherwise known as a union. I don't know whether you noticed, but Michigan finally got fed up. They finally got rid of the closed shop state. They finally decided that right to work wasn't just a nasty phrase that evil conservative Tea Partiers use. It was a common sense application of the Declaration of Independence, right to liberty, life, and the pursuit of happiness. It only took them about, 40 years to figure it out? Virginia, thank God, is a right to work state and always has been. If it weren't, I probably would not be employed, because I am not a member of the union, any union. And I don't intend to become a member of a union. This collectivization of our children, some of the horror stories that we heard tonight on Glenn's show, some of the material that they wanted to use and are using in this CSCO plan for the education of children from kindergarten on up. The idea, I remember on tonight's show, David Barton showed a list of people in first who were being touted in history books as heroes for first through third graders. And it was like about 20 different names, out of which three were considered to be conservatives, and the three were Teddy Roosevelt was one of them. Teddy Roosevelt all of a sudden turned into a conservative. Teddy Roosevelt was the progressive's god. He's the one who sequestered all that lovely land in the national parks, which is not a bad thing. It's great to preserve national parks. But in the process, he also tightened up federal land usage, and it's gotten worse and worse and worse, so that's part of the reason why we can't get at the incredible resources that we're sitting on in this country. Because we are not allowed to use our resources because they're all scarce. Just the idea that carbon dioxide is a dangerous pollutant, for God's sake, which the EPA has been allowed to say, should make everybody just roll around on the floor in hysterical laughter. What are you going to do, outlaw trees? Yeah. Because they have it. Trees can't exist without carbon dioxide. And those happy little trees give us lots of extra oxygen. So, since they need that carbon dioxide and it isn't going to be in the air anymore because it's a pollutant, they're going to go away, and what's that going to do to our happy little air? None of the progressive ideals or desires or wishes make any sense. But our kids don't know that. Everybody out there listening, please, please look at your children and grandchildren and nieces and nephews' textbooks and curriculum. Find out what they are being taught. Go back to school, folks. Go back to school for yourself and for your kids. Get a history textbook. Go online and research history. Go to your library. Use an actual physical book with pages, or download something onto your Kindle if you want to. You have to be the guardian of your children's education, because the government is falling down on the job. The government is the wolf, ladies and gentlemen, and it's taking off its sheep's clothing, and people are still herding the flock in its direction. This nation was founded on the principle that governments derive their just powers from the consent of the governed. And silence is consent. If you do not find out what is going on in your public schools, in your town, your county, your village, your city, then you consent to your children being taught lies. And being told by people that they are supposed to respect that they don't really have to know anything because somebody will take care of them and they're entitled to a college education. You are the only ones who can counter this, ladies and gentlemen. You, the ones sitting there listening to me, the ones paying attention right now. And you have got to get on your feet and go out there and drag people in by the scruff of their neck if necessary. Anytime your school sends home a notice or puts on their website or says in their email that they are getting new textbooks, you go and you look at them. And if they won't give them to you, and if they won't show you the curriculum, and if they will not give you a syllabus for your child's grade, then you demand that they get it. And you get a bunch of people together, and you all go and demand it. Public schools cannot deny you the sight of what they are teaching your kids. And you won't know unless you go and look. Because 9 times out of 10, they don't even send home the textbooks. The number of kids that I see in my classroom when I pull out a textbook to give them additional work, oh, we don't use the textbook. We just use the notes and the answer key. In other words, their understanding of civics is a set of answers they've been given to questions like, what are the 3 branches of government and what do they do? And the notes and the questions and the answers show up on their tests in exactly the same words, and they're multiple choice. I know, there are people out there who are going, what? I promise you, ladies and gentlemen, this is exactly what happens. I see it every single day. I had a teacher's aide, bring the science notes for today's classes to my 8th grade student that I had today. Not just the notes, but the interactive fill-in-the-blank part, already filled in. And I told the student, he said, well, I don't have to do this, it's just notes. I said, well, you have to know what's in it. And he said, no, I don't. You know, I just study this and it'll show up on the test. I said, okay, wait a minute, get a textbook. We're going to do a little extra work. You've got some more time in here. Get a science textbook, open to chapter 12, section 2, and read the section. So he goes, reluctantly, gets the science book, opens it to chapter 12, section 2. It goes, yeah, right, all right, like this. And I said, okay. And I get up and I go get a textbook. And I come back to my desk and I sit down and I open it. And I said, okay, you open it to this page. Now you follow along. And I read it out loud to him. And I'll be doggone if he didn't understand every single word in it. And we talked about it. It was about basically the formula for denoting the input and output effort on a machine. And it was leading to simple machines and the fact that a machine is something that, through the application of distance and change of direction, allows the input effort to give out more an output of work than it would without the machine. He understood it. We talked about it. He gave examples. He was fascinated by the fact that a zipper is an application of a simple machine, the wedge. Or the idea that the inclined plane increased the distance over which you used the force and effort, therefore you got a better output for less effort. He understood it. But he would never have gotten anything out of that information with what he was given. Not a thing. Granted, this kid has a lot of problems. He's the one who's dyslexic and dysgraphic and everything else, but he's not stupid. He can and does learn. But he's pretty much given up because he's been allowed to. He's been told, directly and indirectly, that, oh, poor baby, you have these problems, so you really don't have to try. We'll do it for you. I am so glad that my husband was born in 1947 and not 1980. Because when he was diagnosed as dyslexic, his parents said, it's going to be about three times as hard for you to do this stuff. That means you're going to have to work your butt off to get it, but you can. There wasn't any, oh, poor baby, you don't have to try, mommy will do it for you. Believe me, with my husband's mother, that would have, you know, she, if that had come out of her mouth, we'd have had her committed. But this is what's going on in our schools, ladies and gentlemen. And this is a child who has potential. He really likes science, and he's good at it. He is abysmal at math. His ability to understand what's read to him and use the words that he knows is quite good if he doesn't have to actually physically write it and he has something that'll check his spelling. But he is being denied his education while he's being told that, oh, we're helping you to get one. No, they are not helping him to get an education. They are helping to give him grades and make him feel good about himself, which he doesn't. And spend 12 years in classrooms and come out knowing less than he did when he got there. And this, ladies and gentlemen, is going to be the net result for not just the kids who are in special ed with an IEP and have learning disabilities. This is going to be the result for every single cotton picking one of them who is average. The really bright ones, they're going to learn if you sit them in a parking lot with a phone book. They'll figure out a way to learn because they want to. They are not at risk here. They are, however, a minority. And all of the other ones who are getting de-educated for 12 years are going to literally outvote them. Yeah, they're going to outvote them. You noticed, I think, in the last presidential election, they already are. And it should terrify you that 51% of this nation is that stupid. Not to see through the sugar coating to the rotten core of the apple beneath. I get angry, ladies and gentlemen, because I am passionate about my profession. I love to teach. The only thing of value that I have is what I know and what I have learned. And it is my greatest joy to share that with anybody who wants it. And most particularly young people. Because I know that they are the ones who are going to innovate and change and create. If we just give them the basic tools as the springboard to their own incredible brilliance. And when I see that brilliance and potential and amazing, beautiful minds thrown on the scrap heap of the almighty collective, I truly would like to, you know, bite a hole in my wall. My friend Rod said that he dropped out because school was boring. They taught on such a low level that, you know, he could do the homework just in the time it takes to call roll. And believe me, I do understand. I do understand. I've had a lot of kids on that end of the scale, too. I don't worry about them because they are lifetime learners. They'll find a way to learn. The schools won't hold them back. But they're in the minority. They're the top 10%. They're the movers and shakers, the Steve Jobs and the creators, okay? And a lot of them will drop out of school because school is really dumb for them, okay? And I kind of agree with the young man that I was talking about earlier when he said school is dumb. And he's right. It is. It's designed to be dumb. More and more and more. It's designed to be a combination indoctrination center and babysitting service. Teachers, ladies and gentlemen, are born, not made. I know because I've tried lots of other things and I always wind up teaching somebody something no matter what job I've got. It's apparently part of my DNA. And it is a joy. I work with some really great teachers who are also born to it and just as passionate about what they do as I am. And what scares me is how long can we keep these great teachers and take the schools in the direction they're heading thanks to the progressives in charge of our public education? How are we going to create a future that supersedes the tremendous advances of the past when we spend billions of dollars in dumbing down our population? Unfortunately, my friend Linda just gave me a very nice compliment. Thank you. I hate to sound egotistical, but yes, the things that I've learned are a treasure trove. I tell my students that the only thing that can never be taken away from them is what they know. Your house, your car, your family, your children, your spouse, your cat, your dog, your livelihood, any one of those can vanish in a moment. But what you put in your mind and what you put in your heart, no one can rip from you without completely killing you first. And I mean literally killing you. It's the only thing that you get to keep no matter what. And if you don't put anything in there, you are going to be bankrupt no matter how much material goods you accumulate. Because those material goods can go away in a heartbeat, ladies and gentlemen. It happened in Vietnam to the educated and wealthy and business class. They were left scrambling to try to climb into a helicopter as it lifted off when Saigon fell. Those that hadn't gotten out before the Viet Cong got their victory. It happened in China when all of the teachers and professors and inventors and brilliant men and women were relocated to re-education camps to learn the glory of digging for 14 hours a day, having a bowl of rice, sleeping for 6 hours, and then getting up for 3 hours of communist peasants are wonderful indoctrination before they went out to dig for 14 more hours. And I know there are people out there who are saying, oh, well, she's crazy. That could never happen here. Really? You think so? Just think about how much you depend on all of the infrastructure in your life. Everything from the electricity to operate the computer over which I'm speaking to you now, to the gasoline to get to your job, and to fill the school bus tanks so your kids can go to school. And the roads that you drive on. What happens when the Second Amendment is put aside so that you have no way to resist tyranny? What happens when our system of a constitutional republic and federalism is ditched in favor of the great commune of the global citizen? You get Agenda 21, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah. I urge you all to please, please read that book. It is a novel. It is a futuristic dystopian novel co-authored by Glenn Beck and a woman who was a fan and really began to investigate Agenda 21 and the UN's plan for sustainability and saw what the outcome would be. You need to be aware that what is happening in our public schools is part of this. You are not going to get Americans to buy into this until you get a batch of Americans who vote and have no ability to think for themselves. Right now, we only have 51% of those. And that should scare you to death. We need to not worry about the 99% or whatever, or the 1% or the 10% or the percent of percent. We need to worry about our kids. Public education is the best propaganda and retraining tool that government has. Because when you are in a classroom 7.5 hours a day for 12 years and a certain political, social ideology is placed in every subject you take, from language arts through math and science and history, you will absorb that ideology and that framework because everything will be geared to it. Math, science, history, English, everything. Your essay topics in English will be on things like, is it fair for somebody to make a lot of money and not share it? In math, you will be given word problems that basically describe if so-and-so recycles this many pounds of this and so-and-so only recycles this many pounds, okay, how will the environment be affected by the second person, and is that a good thing? And science, of course, is wide open. Even the textbooks I see now with the global warming and the climate change directly and indirectly running throughout anything that has to do with geology, biology, ecology, etc. The understanding that our kids are ripe for seduction, ladies and gentlemen, is the core of the Fabian socialist long-term view. The Fabian socialists, from roughly 1880 on, have always said that they're willing to wait for the glorious utopia. We nudge here, we push a little here, we import this, we plant this, we regulate that, and eventually we will get the collective that we envision. They aren't, you know, red flag waving, wild-eyed maniacs with bombs. Oh, no. Mm-mm. They're college professors, politicians, wealthy, George Soros types. People like the news media, who basically every time a conservative says something, belittle it in favor of the glorious collective viewpoint. Because they make it sound so good. And even 30-somethings out there have had 25 years or so of conditioning to believe that this is good. It is not at all unusual for 17 to 25-year-olds to be madly in love with socialist ideals. Because 17 to 25-year-olds, on the average, are very idealistic. They're very naive. They do not have the life experience that someone ancient like me possesses. They have yet to have a disaster happen to them, most of them. Most of them on college campuses are incredibly wealthy. I know that sounds funny, and you'll say, oh, well, what about scholarship students? What about the kids that are, in student loan debt? They're not wealthy. Well, yes, they are. They grew up in a home with plenty of food, clothes to wear, the latest and most fashionable, school supplies that they needed, vacations, movies, video games, television, Wii, Xbox, Game Boy, the best and latest of phones, all of those things. We are the wealthiest nation in the world, ladies and gentlemen. In spite of our recession, in spite of our stock market ups and downs and the toboggan ride that we're taking, we are the wealthiest nation, not only in the modern world, but that has ever existed in the history of mankind. We are all cushioned against failure. The things that we take for granted would be paradise to somebody in Somalia. Our kids are used to feeling comfortable. And because they are idealistic and want to believe in everything has to be fair, because we teach them that. We tell them you have to be fair. You can't cheat on this game. You got to be fair. You got a little Susie. You have to share the candy. You can't eat it all. You have to make sure everybody gets some. We teach them that fairness is a good thing. But progressives don't teach them that it's fair to share what you have willingly and joyfully. Progressives teach them that it's fair to make everybody share what they have. And it's not fair that anybody should have more than anybody else, even if they put forth the effort for it. And that if you do happen to put forth effort and gain more than somebody else, fairness dictates that you should not be permitted to keep all of it because it isn't fair that you've got this, so you have to be forced, somehow or other, to share what you have because you won't do it unless we make you. In effect, progressive education and progressive ideology wants to make certain that every single citizen in this nation remains at the mental age of 6. Six. When you were 6, you believed in playground rules. You believed that being fair was necessary. Everybody had to be fair. You believed that telling the truth was a good thing. You believed that sharing and playing together nicely was important. You believed that the adults around you were there to take care of you, and that if something happened that was scary, you went to a grown-up, and they would make it right. You believed that somebody would always be there to pick you up when you fell down, or fill your lunchbox for you, or tie the strings on the back of your dress, only they don't wear dresses anymore, or help you get your shoes on in the morning, or tie them for you. You believed those things when you were six. Progressives want you to remain six. They want you to believe in playground fare, where nobody has an AK-47 or a very large, very heavy, fuel-filled passenger jet that they are aiming at your financial center. Progressives want you to live on the global playground, where everybody plays nicely and we share the seesaw and the swings and the jungle gym and the merry-go-round, you know, the little carousel thing, and we all play fair. And if there's an argument over who gets to make the truck go up the hill in the sandbox, we sit down and talk about it, and we share the truck so everybody gets a chance to run it up the hill. Yeah. You can't stay six forever, ladies and gentlemen, and you can't keep your children six forever either. You can't let them be socially promoted so they feel good about themselves. You can't let them be given materials instead of having to actually produce them in a classroom, such as notes that they would actually have to take. I remember when I was in middle school, the struggle it was to learn how actually to take notes, how to listen and write down key points at the same time. That was tough. That was a difficult job to do. I learned to do it. These kids aren't learning how to do it. Oh, no, they're being given the notes. And they're expecting, when they get out of school, to be given other things as well. Because that's the way it's always been. That's fair. Well, this is hard for me. It's not fair that Johnny over there gets it easily and I don't. So I need you to give me the notes because it's hard for me to write them down. So they do. And so Johnny says, well, why the heck should I write it down? He's gotten them all anyway. So Johnny, who can do it, is also given the notes. I read an article online that was written by a college professor or a blogger who talked with several different universities and professors of entering freshmen, and the various universities and freshman professors asked their students to write down what they wished, now that they were in college, to tell their high school teachers as far as their preparation. And the answers, the things that they wanted to tell their high school teachers, included, don't give us the notes and then regurgitate them on a test in exactly the same words. Our professors won't do that. Yeah. Don't tell us exactly what we're supposed to do five times. Give us the syllabus and make us responsible for following it. Because that's what we got to do when we get here. We're handed the syllabus. We know when stuff's due. Don't give us makeup work like cleaning the wastebasket or washing the whiteboard for a grade. We're not going to be able to do that here. If we don't know the stuff, we're going to fail the test. We're going to get kicked out of college. And don't let us plagiarize things. Because if we try that here, not only will we be kicked out of college, we could also be sued. These kids are finding out that all of this stuff that they have been supposedly taught hasn't actually taught them anything. They go to college, and it used to be about 10 or 15 years ago, the statistic was that roughly 60% of college freshmen flunk out before the end of their freshman year. Now, I wonder just what that percentage is now. Unless, of course, you're Harvard. and the student happens to be black, then you don't plunk them out. You can't, because that would be racist. We are, ladies and gentlemen, watching the demise of our country unless we stand up and start saying something about it. All of us, not just me, not just talk show hosts like Glenn Beck or Rush Limbaugh, not just people like David Barton or, bless his heart, senators like Rand Paul with his filibuster over the god-awful Eric Holder statement that, oh yeah, sure, we can use drones in the U.S. There probably will. There might be an occasion when we could do that. We all have to be those people. Every single one of us. We can't sit back and say, oh, well, somebody else will take care of it. Because we've been doing that, and look what we've got. We have to do something. All of us at Patriot Families try to do something. Every single one of us is taking a stand somehow, somewhere, doing a radio show, talking to people on the street, going to city council meetings or school board meetings, standing around with a sign at a Tea Party rally, writing letters to our congressmen, writing letters to our state legislators, paying attention to what's going on the planning commissions of our towns and our cities, and going to the school board meeting and the city council meeting and the planning commission meeting, and actually reading those public notices that they put in the paper about rezoning this or a change in the development plan for that. And asking questions and pinning people down. Because we are the governed, ladies and gentlemen, and when we are silent, we are giving our consent to be, if you will, raped. I don't mean to be gross. I don't mean to be, I don't know what to call it, you know, profane. I do not mean to incite people to riot. Riots don't solve anything because they just get a bunch of people killed or tear gassed and nothing changes. But unless we stand up and we speak out and we investigate, we are consenting to tyranny. Ongoing and future tyranny. Most people kind of gloss over that lovely statement that governments derive their just powers from the consent of the governed and think, well, gee whiz, see, we vote for them and yeah, so everything's okay. No, it's not. You can't just vote for them and then go away and forget they exist. That's how some of them stay there for 30, 40, 50 years, piling regulation and law upon regulation and law until you can't even breathe without a government permit. We cannot give our consent by silence, ladies and gentlemen, because that is what we have been doing. And that is why we have the god-awful mess in our public education system that we have now. Because too many people sat back and handed over the raising of their children to public education. Our public schools are not there to be surrogate parents, ladies and gentlemen. Surrogate ministers, surrogate psychologists, surrogate babysitters. They are there to teach our kids the basic academic tools they need to have to continue to learn and grow throughout their lives. They are not there to make our children feel good about their grades. They are not there to provide physical education and art and music and band and field trips to the local carnival. They are not there to bind up the psychological wounds caused by failure when you don't study and don't try. They are there to give our children their first real experience of the fact that if you want something, you have to put forth effort to get it. That's the first time our kids get the understanding of a work ethic outside of the family. And if that work ethic isn't a part of their public school, and if the understanding that failure doesn't mean that you are thrown away, failure just means you figure out where you went wrong and don't make the same mistake next time. If that's not part of our public schools, then they are failing you and your children and our future. We do not need a common core curriculum of dumbed down citizen, ladies and gentlemen. We need a common core of American values, American liberty, and American thought. That was one of my cats telling me, "Mom, I'm hungry." Well, Kitty is not going to get fed until my show's over, so I'm afraid you're stuck with me for about another 20 minutes, folks. We need, all of us, every single one of us, whether we have students in school or not, we need to now take action. And if you can't get resolution or some kind of improvement in your public school, then you figure out a way to get your kid out of it. Whatever you have to do, short of criminal activity, if you cannot get your schools to listen to you, then you get your kid out of your schools. Because if you leave them there with the kind of education, that they're currently getting, you, like me, will look at the very real possibility that you will outlive your own country. We can change it, ladies and gentlemen. Every single one of us has more power than we know. As I've said before, it only takes one pebble to start an avalanche. Be that pebble. Join the PTA or PTO or whatever your parent-teacher organization is called. Find out what goes on at PTA meetings. Find out who is making the decisions about the curriculum and the textbook and the materials. My friend Linda reminds me that there's a state senator in Texas who was on Glenn's show tonight who is investigating C-Scope, the not-for-profit corporation that is shoving this god-awful Marxist curriculum onto the Texas public schools. And there are people out there who are standing up and speaking out. And we all need to be part of that. My influence or wealth or power is minimal, ladies and gentlemen. I'm just a little old lady who does a radio show on the internet and works in a public school. But I am not a silent little old lady. And I'm a very stubborn little old lady. And I know that this is one way that I can try to make sure that I don't outlive my country and that my grandchildren don't either. This is the greatest nation in the world and the greatest nation in the history of mankind because it has done something remarkable in its over 200 years of existence. It has figured out a way, if we follow our Constitution, to protect the integrity of society and still allow individual liberty to flourish. No other nation or society in the history of mankind has been able to do that for as long as we have. And we have both the duty and the right to be proud of that achievement and to teach our children to be proud of it and to explain to them why it was achieved and how. Not to have them told that the people at the Tea Party in Boston in 1773 were terrorists who were all drunk, or that Paul Revere was warning Lexington and Concord about the seizure of their arms because he was stockpiling illegal drugs, or that communism is the ultimate goal of an evolved society. No. We need, because we all teachers, we all teach, we need to be teachers of ourselves. We all need to be teachers. Every single one of us. And we need to teach ourselves and one another that this nation will not go down in ignominious defeat to a bunch of slimy toads who promise everything and then take away those things that matter. I urge you, ladies and gentlemen, to join us every night of the week here on Blog Talk Radio. We have great shows for you every single night. On Mondays, we have Constitution Hour with my friend Ron Golden. Tuesdays, Patriot Family Chat with Bill Strong. Wednesdays, Right from the Left Coast with that bird of paradise from California, Linda Sills. And every Thursday, the crazy little old lady for Patriot Education. On Fridays, Foreclosure Help. On Saturdays, Breaking the Illusion. On Sundays, Frank is Fed Up. We have something to say, ladies and gentlemen, something important to say about what we believe in. And we know those of you out there listening believe in it too. Otherwise, you'd go listen to something else. My friend Linda has worked for 3 years to get people to really begin to understand the dangers of Agenda 21. And they are beginning to see it more and more each day because she works her butt off to get the word out. The number of people who responded to Glenn Beck's urging to call and write and email your cable company to get the blaze on cable. Millions and millions of people did. The fact that Rand Paul's filibuster was the top Twitter topic, for heaven's sake, worldwide. There are people standing up for our beliefs in liberty, for the individual, and in our belief that every human being deserves the opportunity to succeed, and our belief that nobody guarantees you success, but we can guarantee you the shot at it. And we believe that the very best thing you can do for yourself is to educate yourself, so you then can in turn educate others. Mankind has been on Earth for a pretty long time. We've managed to survive, not because we have bigger claws and longer teeth and better muscles than, oh, say, a woolly mammoth or a saber-toothed tiger, but because we have an active and inventive and learning mind. And if we do not promote the idea that that active and learning and inventive mind is the best thing we can develop, if we tell our children that being stupid is the norm and anybody who isn't is evil, then our species will die out pretty doggone quickly, ladies and gentlemen. The dodo bird didn't hang around very long. That's why the term dodo means stupid. They were. They couldn't adapt. We can. We also can fix what's wrong with our educational system. We can, using technology and common sense and the understanding that we aren't going to get equal outcomes, provide literally that equal opportunity to learn to every single child. Like the young man who can use a computer to let his intelligence show. We can do it. But we can't do it if we allow government to tell us we're too stupid to change it, and that government is doing what's right for us because we're too dumb to figure it out for ourselves. I want to thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for being with us this evening. And I want to remind you again to join us every night of the week for a radio show by one of our super, super members of Patriot Families. And I also want to urge every single one of you who has a chance to go out and get involved in conservative and libertarian ideas. I am, I guess you could say, a libertarian more than I am anything else. I don't really like labels, but sometimes we need them. Obviously, a pantry full of jars full of stuff that you can't tell what's in the jar is kind of useless unless you really enjoy literal potluck. So we do need some kinds of labels, if for no other reason than to give our interlocutors, the people we talk with and speak and live with and work with, some idea of where we stand on issues that are important to all of us. So that libertarian label, I guess you could probably slap on me, because most of the libertarian ideas I agree with. But you don't have to be a libertarian or a Republican or a Democrat or a conservative or a liberal or a progressive simply because somebody tells you that that's the proper thing to be. You have to be everything that you are. And you don't find out everything you are if you complacently sit back and say, oh, there's nothing new for me to learn. And you certainly don't tell a child that, because they have so much to find out to become who they are. And to my mind, it is criminal to deprive a child of that opportunity to learn and grow by treating him as if he should remain eternally 6 years old and sharing a ride on the merry-go-round with other six-year-olds. Childhood can be and should be a wonderful time, but it cannot be the end-all, be-all of your life. Unfortunately, everybody has to grow up. Adam and Eve did. Yep, they did. Once they got kicked out and faced the storm naked, they had to grow up pretty doggone fast. And if you remember that tree that Eve got the apple from, in some interpretations, it's the tree of knowledge of good and evil. And both of those things exist. Our heritage as human beings is that we have to figure out what is good and what is evil. And we ask for help from our fellow human beings, from the spiritual path we follow, from those who educate and train us, from those who say they wish to lead us. But when it comes down to it, at the very end, at the very precise, critical moment, the decision is always ours as individuals. We have to look evil in the face and recognize it for what it is, and we have to look at good and strive to increase it as an individual, not as a part of the collective, not as a part of the in-crowd, not as a member of the party or one of the group. It always comes back to the individual. And it is that understanding that's the foundation of what has made this country great. And it is that understanding that will preserve her greatness and make it grow in the future. Thank you again, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us tonight. I'm going to be ending just a little bit early because it's been kind of a long day. But I'll be back again next Thursday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Patriot Education. And I hope you'll join me then. Also, please visit our Patriot Families website. Get to know the folks who are such a wonderful support to me and tremendous American patriots. Become part of us. That's a group you'll enjoy because, like herding cats, okay, everybody and everything has an opinion, and we're not at all shy about sharing it. Thank you all again for being here tonight, ladies and gentlemen. Have a wonderful evening and educate yourselves and everybody you come in contact with, because I believe in the great teachers you are. Good night, all, and we'll see you next week. Hi, my tip. Hi, my tip. Hi, my tip.
How's your medical issue going? I'm waiting on the front of the doctor.